You are actually moving my cheese. Stop that.
This episode is not sponsored by NordVPN.
Cut the internet lines because we can't make Twitter stop.
There's no middle ground between a free internet and totalitarian control.
Philosophers. All right, David, what are we talking about today?
We're going to talk about regulating the internet, making laws for the internet.
You know, on the surface of it, I feel like the question being begged here is, I mean, how is this different from regulating anything else, right? Like, why not? I mean,
it isn't. The end. Well, the main thing is that the internet is a global network which spans multiple countries, not all of which have treaties with one another about sharing laws of this nature.
True. And I think...
And even if like, okay, the United States has borders with Canada and Mexico and may have treaties about how internet links are going to go between those countries, but like Mexico has its own linkage with its own neighbors,
mm-hmm.
and United States does not control those. So even if every country did have formal agreements with every neighboring country, you know, it is a network. And so, yeah, you're ultimately going to all be networked together with folks that you don't actually have agreements with. And so trying to create rules for the internet becomes very complicated because you have to contend with foreign powers that may not care about your laws.
Yeah. Well, and more importantly, I think internet grew... I think there's a good analog, no pun intended, for how internet regulation was attempted in radio, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So that is another thing that literally can just go wherever it wants. It just does, right? It would be really difficult to regulate radio if everybody could radio, but it grew slow enough and there's a barrier to entry that made it easier, I think, to get a handle on how to regulate this.
Well, we have a case study on a time where everyone did have a radio and then the barrier to entry was pretty low. CB radio,
mm-hmm.
from back in like the 60s or whatever, 60s and 70s, and maybe even a little bit before that when it was still a big deal. CB radio grew in popularity because of the national speed limit, which was a hilarious thing. That you know about this, right?
No, actually, I don't.
Oh, okay. There was a time, I'm not going to remember the exact years, but there was a time in which there was a national speed limit of 55 miles an hour. No road could have a speed limit posted higher than 55 miles an hour. Needless to say, truckers were not happy about this. This is where the association between CB radio and truckers comes from.
Mm.
Truckers all bought CB radios to inform one another about where the cops were.
Because time is their money. And getting they get paid on delivery. So,
yes. Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. So it all grew around evading the law in the first place. But then that became a big enough... Well, and then there's then cultural things like Smokey and the Bandit, which is about a situation like that.
Yep.
And so that made it very popular in the culture. So, yeah, people just started getting CB radios. Obviously, not everyone was doing this, but a lot more people than otherwise would. And back in those days, back in like the 60s and before, you had to have a license to operate a CB radio, much like any other radio service, as the FCC calls them, that the FCC regulates. You have to get a license and there are rules to follow. Well, people didn't, and they didn't follow the rules. And eventually the FCC lost all control and just gave up and stopped even, they just dropped the license requirement. And now basically the only rules that remain in place to these days for CB radio is rules about the way the equipment has to be manufactured.
No.
Because they can control the companies that make the radios.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a CB radio, I guess there's also like some rules about how much power you're supposed to run. But again, people run amplifiers anyway. And I don't know the last time anyone got in trouble for doing that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is apparently very hard to regulate radio when everyone has one and there's a low barrier to entry.
Yeah. Well, and I think more interestingly, like, when we're talking about the internet, so the protocols by which the internet operates. Now, this is not something I expect everybody to know because it doesn't matter. But you do know what the protocols are. You just don't know that they're probably the protocols. But HTTP, Hypertext Transfer Protocol.
Yes,
it's in the name. That is the
protocol for transferring hypertext, which is text that's hyper.
it's all hopped up.
It's had too much sugar.
But pretty much any web page you would ever visit, or any address that you would arrive at on the internet, that you would arrive at on the internet most of the time, is going to serve up an HTTP document, which is or an HTML document, which is served over HTTP, yes. which is the website. And there's other things that go on, but that's not important. That protocol has nothing to do, like, and I think this is one of the great things about the internet, at least especially within its early days. That was the whole point. It doesn't matter, like, this protocol does not care about the country, the laws. It's just a way to communicate. In the same way that the radio frequencies care not for the content of what's being sent over them.
Right. You just need to speak the same protocol, like AM or something.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. AM or FM or any of the other modulations. But yeah.
Right. That being said, however, and not to, you know, not give radio its due, that for the longest time, everything that mattered for long distance communications was a form of radio. TV is actually a form of radio.
Right. Actual television. Yeah. Is radio, technically.
Technically.
And actually, even to this day, cable service is kind of radio. It just never leaves the wire now.
Right.
It's all still done over radio frequency. It just stays inside the coax.
Yep. Your cell phone still uses radios to communicate.
Wi-Fi is radios.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bluetooth, radios.
They're just speaking different protocols.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the internet served over radio. That's pretty common, mm-hmm. you know, in that way. But the difference is that it's so abstracted away that you never even bother to think about it. But the internet itself, and I guess this is where I think maybe the rubber hits the road. You know, what are we talking about when we talk about regulating the internet in the same way? I think there is a way where we mean it in the terms of the ways we attempt to and do in some ways regulate radio, because this, you know, and I'm sure if you've ever known a conspiracy theorist in your life, they will let you know exactly how radio works, because it kind of is fundamental to you understanding the conspiracy theory about like things like 5G and whatnot. Radio waves, depending on their frequency and power, don't care about the physical objects they pass through.
Right. Just like, well, okay, radio waves are just light waves of relatively low frequency. But yeah, different light waves of different frequencies pass through different mediums. We call them colors when we can see them. And so there are different materials that let certain colors through and others not through. And it's the same thing.
Yep.
It's just because the shape of that thing will allow certain wavelengths to pass through and will absorb others or reflect them. It's the same thing, all based on the wavelength of the radio wave, which corresponds to the frequency.
Yep.
It will pass through a barrier or be absorbed by it or be reflected by it.
Yeah. And this is intuitive, I think, if you just have considered for a moment that you don't maintain line of sight with your Wi-Fi router in your house, but it still works on your phone.
Yeah, it passes through walls, no problem.
Sure.
But it won't pass through a metal shield.
Right. Oh, that's another one. If you've ever been in a metal building and tried to make a phone call, like...
Yeah. Good luck.
Good luck. You know, it's a thing. Or I'm going into a tunnel now. You know, sufficient enough material getting in the way will also cause this. But
yes,
you know, so these are things that I feel like should be fairly intuitive, but maybe you don't need to think about them every day. So just to refresh you about those things. So the fact that that exists means that on any given frequency, there may be a bunch of different things being said over that frequency. And so that's, I think, and you know more about this than I do, but I think that's largely where a lot of the regulation for radio comes from, is the fact that, hey, we share this. Like, I can't stop the propagation of electromagnetic waves easily through the air. So we need to, like, coordinate how we do this.
There's only one electromagnetic field and we all have to share it.
Right.
And the only way that we know how to divide the electromagnetic field is into bands of frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
We know how to make equipment that only listens to certain frequencies at a time and only makes waves at certain frequencies at a time. So we have to organize it that way.
Yeah. Like a very maybe trivial way to think about this is if a bunch of people are standing in a line and there's a wire between them and we're all moving the wire up and down, it can seem like noise, like the wire moves in a very unpredictable way. But if we were coordinating how fast we were moving the wire up and down, and we also weren't like canceling out the movements of others necessarily. This is maybe a crude analogy.
The greatest analogy for this.
But the point of the analogy is that we're all sharing the same wire. And if I'm using the wire as an analog for the electromagnetic spectrum, mm-hmm. Which exists everywhere. You can't just make
it's
another
like
one.
It's like singling out voices. I think you could think of it that way.
Yeah, that's probably a better analogy.
Everyone's voice sounds a little bit different, so you can pick them out of the noise of a crowd mm-hmm. if you know what to listen for.
You can also change if the group that you want to talk to, if you want to talk to someone across the room, you can also coordinate how you and the people that are going to help you talk to that person are structured mm-hmm. within the room.
Sure.
So that I could, imagine a large, let's imagine a facility like a basketball court, right? That's a large place.
Okay.
I could yell as loud as I wanted to across the court to talk to you, but I'm going to shout over everyone else in the way. Mm-hmm. So, but if people on the other corners wanted to talk to each other, we can't just be shouting.
Now you're raising the noise floor.
Right. We either
now no one can hear each other because we're all yelling now.
Right. So how do you deal with this? You either need to take turns yelling and have a system to determine when it's your turn to yell, and then you still hear it. And this is, I think, something that kind of freaks some people out to think about. It, and this is exactly how it is in radio. Everyone can hear you. There's no way to be deaf to certain frequencies necessarily, unless you just intentionally stop listening. But
well, right, and that's what a receiver or tuner is supposed to do. It's supposed to tune out the other frequencies that you're not trying to listen to.
Right, but as simple as if I'm trying to talk to you 10 feet away, anybody could walk in between the two of us and hear everything we're saying.
Yes.
So is radio.
Right.
It's the same way. You can encode the message.
It's all just waves rippling through the EM field. That's it.
Right.
And the only way that you can be private is to encode it in some way, which we could do speaking in person as well. We could come up with a secret code or make up our own language or whatever that no one else can understand.
Right. But there's no and there are more directed ways you can try to talk. I think we've all kind of seen this before. You can cup your hands around your mouth in such a way to make it harder, not just to see your mouth moving, but actually harder to hear what someone's saying. But you can't make it impossible, really. And the analogy, I guess, would be if you really wanted to be super, super duper private, you could just speak directly into their ear, or you could connect the little cans that have the cords between them, and we could do that. But that's essentially the same way with radio. If you really want no one else to hear your signal,
use wired communication.
Use wires. Yeah, but that's really difficult. You have to run a wire that
distance. Now we have to connect our facilities with wire, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is a good segue into internet. That's exactly what we did.
That's exactly what we did, yeah, because wires.
Because wires. Wires cool. Wires, yeah.
Well, and wires can be long. And they're reliable until they aren't. But they're more reliable. A truck is not going to drive in front of your wire and block it.
Right.
We either suspend them in air or bury them in the ground, and they're uninterrupted.
Mm-hmm. They're also a lot less interferable from other people talking on the wire. Not just inherently, necessarily, but the wire itself can have its own protocol that prevents, that sets...
Not literally the wire itself.
No, but the thing,
equipment connected to the wire.
Right. Can have its own protocols that help guide who's talking to who about what.
And skipping over lots of history about this, we ended up on Ethernet.
Yes.
Which is a thing you've definitely heard of before.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're a Zoomer, I guess, maybe.
Yeah. Well, for the sake of the Zoomers, what is the Ethernet?
Okay, how do I explain this in the simplest way? Okay, well, it's exactly what you said. It is a protocol that was invented to help multiple machines, computers, communicate using a common medium, the ether, as they called it. And it was meant to be an abstract thing. This ether can be anything, in the case that you're talking about a wire, but that's also why it adapted so well to radios. Wi-Fi, we're treating the electromagnetic field as an ether because it kind of is. So that's it. That is a very basic network protocol that allows machines to share a common medium and talk to one another.
Yep. And in a nutshell, you can do whatever it is you're trying to do. Request a website, send a message, doesn't matter. The Ethernet does not care for the content of the messages being sent. It cares only about making sure that every message that is said is understood and no one clobbers each other. So there's a way by which all the machines that are attached to a network can get their turn to speak and then also just be listening to everything and know when to actually actively listen, you know, much in the same way where I imagine we've all nodded off in the classroom before. The teacher is telling this, telling something to all of us, but if they say your name,
you wake up,
your ears perk up and you listen to what they say until they say someone else's name, and then your ears just kind of die back down. You know, it's that, but in a protocol, like there's a step-by-step instruction guide that if we were to list out would sound really tedious and long, but because computers are really good at doing very simple things very quickly, it can run through this 100-step-long script multiple times a second, like many times a second, millions of times,
tens of millions of times per second. Yeah.
So that's what the Ethernet is. So when we talk about like regulating the internet, that is one way by which these things can be regulated. We're talking about the physical construction of the internet, the protocols being used. How can we data the internet? And this was, I think, you know, this is no longer hot news, so there's, I think, no point in really, you know, dating the episode, but that's kind of what net neutrality was about, sort of.
Kind of.
It had less to do, because it was directed mostly at ISPs.
Internet service providers.
Yes. And these are the people that they care about the wires and the data coming. They don't care about the content.
I was going to say, earlier when we were talking about, you know, what does it mean to regulate the internet? And I think the purest form of regulating the internet is regulating the ISPs.
Yes.
The folks who actually make the internet into the internet.
Because, and I think we've all heard this description of the internet before, if you've ever had to take a computer class. The internet is just a network of computers.
Well, it's a network of networks.
That's why
it's called the internet. It's the internet work. The network between the networks.
Much in the same way that international is a
thing between multiple nations.
Right. But at its root core, it is a network of networks, and a network is just a bunch of computers connected to each other that use some protocol to talk to each other.
Right.
Okay. And this is a very physical thing. When people say, well, I'm going to go find the internet. You can't actually do that. There are at least
pieces of it.
Sure. It's huge. If you were to take the whole internet and rip it off the earth and lay it out in space where you could see it,
it'd be this giant net. I wonder where that word network came from.
Yeah, it would be a bunch of wires connected to hubs, and these hubs are computers, nodes that are computers. Now, don't be wrong, some of these computers are very specialized computers. You know, I think this is another thing a lot of people get mixed up. Servers are just computers, but they're very special kinds of computers that are more named for their purpose than their construction.
Right.
Their purpose is
to provide service, of some sort.
Yeah. To serve something up. Yeah, that's why they're called that. But they're usually
built... Because they're bringing your food.
But they are built to handle a lot of traffic, because typically one server is serving many clients.
Right. It's like anything in engineering, it's a trade-off, right? Mm-hmm. So they're saving on costs by not having stuff like graphics processing, which they don't
sometimes
need. Okay, depends. But your conventional server, no graphics processing. All it needs to do is be able to do fast networking and probably also some fast processing as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it can forego the things that you would expect to have on like your laptop.
Yeah, I think largely the things that make a server, because there are servers that are purpose-built to do those things. A server is not meant to be cared for, maintained, and easily usable by the end user. It's built for a user, which is usually your IT person.
It's built for technicians.
Yes, it's built for people who know how to deal with them and configure them in such a way. And they also usually look different because they're built to be put in racks with a bunch of other servers.
Exactly, yeah, you're expected to have a bunch of these at once, yeah.
And exactly. And things like energy efficiency start to matter, you know, more.
But anyway, the point is, any computer can be a server.
That's true.
Your 10-year-old laptop can function as a server. It's not purpose-built for that, so it will do a worse job than a machine that was purpose-built for it.
Sure.
At the same price point. But it can do it, because all it's doing is just speaking a network protocol, which your laptop can do, because it has a general-purpose processor and a network interface.
Right. So that's what I think a lot of people, when you hear about regulating the internet, that's one thing you could mean, is because we don't want everyone's, like, if you and I wanted to build a website, it is very, we do not want everybody who wants to provide something to the internet to have to maintain their own servers. And you don't need to worry about making sure your computer is connected to your neighbor's computer, who's connected to your neighbor's computer. Peer-to-peer is what this is called. It would be very difficult to make sure everybody was connected to everybody. And we just decided that, well, some smart people decided, you know, why don't we just do this for you and provide ways to, for you to connect, and you pay us for that service? Much in the same way, I mean, this actually follows a very similar story to the way electricity and power was created. Mm-hmm. There, in the before times, when, you know, the grid wasn't a thing. It didn't actually exist.
You could just run power to every customer's house individually, straight from the power station,
which is what happened. And these were usually municipal. There would be the generator in your town, and they would stand poles up, and it would actually not be uncommon for one house on the street to have power and the others not, and there'd be enough poles just to get to that person's house, and they would be
then this electricity thing turned out to be pretty useful, and now everyone has it, so it seemed stupid to do that.
Right.
So we made a network of power transmission lines.
Yes. And I think one other thing to talk about with this that is also kind of interesting, you can still see the vestiges of this by how power companies are like patchworked together. Mm-hmm. They grew from hubs out to meet each other. They didn't necessarily all connect to each other and then grow outwards.
Because in the beginning it would only be like cities that have this, right? Yes. And only certain people in the city. Then it became like whole cities. But then, yes, these power companies start getting big enough that they have like kind of overlapping territory.
Right.
And now they have to start cooperating with each other, because now it's like, okay, both of our coverage areas meet up at this one road. Well, it would be dumb for both of us to run power lines down this same road. So we need to come to some sort of agreement about this.
Right. And for those of you who don't live in the U.S., because this is actually a big difference in like the U.S. and a lot of other countries. In some countries where power came about a lot later because you were behind, your government did it for you. And that's why you have usually a government-operated a power company and utilities. In countries that were able to take advantage of this sooner, they're all privately operated still, mm-hmm. largely. Now, they're regulated very strongly because they've become so important to their customers that an outage is a big deal. But they are still...
Yeah, it's not a mere inconvenience anymore if power goes out.
Right, and there's so many...
It actually threatens people's lives when the electricity goes out.
Exactly. And so they're regulated, but they're still privately held. And they have funny names like... PPG, Pittsburgh Power and Gas. Yeah, because it started there. It served the city of Pittsburgh, but it grew well beyond that. But it's not Pennsylvania Power and Gas, you know, because there wasn't the state of Pennsylvania decided to set this up. Pittsburgh did, and Philadelphia did.
Well,
and
then some company in Pittsburgh did.
Sure. Yeah. And maybe in some places it actually was like the city got together and decided to do this, but even then they formed a private company to do it, you know? Anyway, so that's neither here nor there, but it is a very similar story for how ISPs are constructed. And in the same way that there are power companies that only care about moving massive amounts of power across the country because it makes sense to build generators in certain places and consume it elsewhere, you know, and I think this is becoming more of a conversation. Like, it's very obvious with renewables like solar and wind. Some places just aren't sunny. It makes zero sense to build solar there, but you could build it somewhere else and pipe it there. Wind, same way. Same thing with the internet. There are certain companies that don't really care about serving an end user. They serve ISPs. Like we call them backbones, mm-hmm. you know, and they handle a lot of traffic between hubs, but they don't care as much about serving.
Well, I mean, you got to think about it, right? It's someone's responsibility. This is an extreme example, but it's somebody's responsibility to operate the transatlantic cable.
Yeah.
That connects. Did you ever think about how? Yes, yeah, cables. Did you ever think about how we get internet traffic across the ocean?
Underwater cables.
Yeah, we're not using like radios and satellites and stuff. That is really slow. No, yeah, people dragged giant cables across the ocean.
Yeah, massive. I think some of them are as big as a foot in diameter wires. well, it's actually a bunch of wires.
Yeah, it's not just one. It's not like a solid wire. Yeah, that would be silly. But yeah, bunches of little wires and sometimes even like little repeaters in there because the signal gets too weak, so it has to repeat it again.
Yeah. And you can actually go to these. If you live near a coast, you will find at just a normal beach, but there's just these big black cables, like giant black cables coming out of the water up into a building.
Those are really important.
Those are very important. It is a super big mega no-no to mess with those, by the way.
And yeah, you could cause serious international incidents by doing that.
Yes, you can. But yeah, someone had to pay for that. That is not cheap. Someone has to pay for that and do that.
So that's like the ultimate backbone is people who maintain those.
But there are also very similar lines like that that exist on land, you know? And yeah, so you can regulate at that level. You can regulate at the local level. And I think when you start thinking about countries trying to regulate internet, these wires have to cross borders somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't stop at the gate.
They don't stop at the gate. They cross right on through. And in much the same way when you have... And this is a funny thing that exists, but even power lines cross borders more so in Europe than they do in the States. In the United States, they cross states. But in Europe, there are power lines that cross borders. That's a thing that happens. But at a lot of those junctures, you will actually see two substations sitting right next to each other that are connected. And that's for a reason, you know, because states want to have the ability to say, well, if I only had enough power, and you can't just, you have to physically break the wire. And I don't mean like rip it. There's switches exist. You have to physically disconnect it if you don't want power getting... Power doesn't have a mind. You can't regulate the power. It's a non-living thing.
It's physics. It goes or it doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll go... And it'll keep following wires as far as there are wires with sinks on the other end. And when I say sink, I mean things that, like, pull the power to them.
Yeah.
For lack of a better term. I know this is glossing a lot, David.
I know. But I know. I'm very, very tempted to start talking about transmission lines and waves and stuff.
It's hard.
But that is not the point. What this episode is about.
Not the point. But the point is you need a way to sever the connection in such a way that everything on one side of the connection keeps running, but everything on the other side just loses power. You need to have that ability. Internet is the exact same way.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some really interesting examples of countries that take this to an interestingly high degree. North Korea is probably the most interesting example of a country who I don't actually know that there are any hard internet lines going out of North Korea. There might be.
I don't know.
But that it would not surprise me if there wasn't a way for them to disconnect them. And to be fair, any country could have stations where the internet wires come to the country. The funny thing about that, though, is that much like the electricity, it's on or off if you break the wire. It's a lot harder to just selectively let certain traffic in.
And yes, this is where packet filters come in. But unlike other types of filters, you can't, these are not just a thing that you can build. It is software. If you want to control traffic, yeah, you have to have a computer read all the traffic and decide what it's going to repeat on the other side for someone to listen to.
And I think the most famous example of a thing that does this is the Great Chinese Firewall.
Yes.
This is a real thing that exists. All the internet wires, I'm glossing, I'm not an expert on this.
Again, yeah, we're glossing over details here.
But for all intents and purposes, everywhere there is an internet wire that comes from some other country into the country of China, it goes direct, it may not be right on the border, but that big wire goes to a building where it's connected to a bunch of computers, and they read everything that comes in, everything that goes out.
And they decide to drop packets if they don't like
what's being said.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to be fair,
not necessarily as specific as like they're literally reading like the message that you're sending and looking at what words are in it and saying, okay, this uses a keyword. Maybe they do that. But I think the big thing is like controlling where outside of China you can connect to.
Right. Because essentially I think for simplicity, we do have to explain a little bit about these packets. In a nutshell, when we talk about a packet, it's like a data parcel where it has a to and from address and usually some ledger of here's the original requester, here's the original sender, and here's the most recent person who sent this to me. You may skip all the people in between.
Because again, yeah, it's bouncing off of different intermediate steps in the chain.
And those things aren't as important as who did I just get this from and who originally sent it. Because just for the sake of argument, it's like sending things in the mail. you, when you put a, your letter in the mail, it says who I want to send it to, who the end recipient is.
Yeah, destination address, return address.
Yes, but as it's going through a mail system, it's going to say which center it came from to the next center.
Right, it's going
to
get postmarked, yeah.
Right, but you don't care about that. So, same thing with digital packets. Now, much like how they could take your mail and open it up and see what the content of your mail is, you and I could come up with a cipher and make up garbage that they can't read. But, and that's, that by the way, happens almost by default these days. That's what,
yeah, these days encryption is very common, although it wasn't always. But the source and destination cannot be encrypted because the intermediate steps have to know where it's going in order to get it there.
Exactly. Well, that's mostly true, I guess. I don't know if onion routing is different, but we'll talk about that later if necessary. Not the point of this, I think, major discussion, but in a nutshell, yes, they may just decide looking at the header, like, oh, this is coming from some country we don't like. We don't want people in that country or things in that country talking to people in our country. So we're just going to disregard that packet. It also included in that packet is who in that country. So a good example, YouTube or Facebook, they stamp all their stuff that gets sent out because you need to be able to call them back and get more posts or whatever.
Right. So China can just maintain a list of IP addresses that all correspond to those and drop packets that are going to and from those if they want.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is one way internet can be regulated by governments. But just the act of doing that impairs the ability for those on the inside, on either side of the firewall, from communicating with the other, because it everything you do to that adds time. It takes longer, you know, we've come to expect when you click on a link to go to a web page, it load very quickly. Mm-hmm. And we are familiar with, the internet is being slow, and you usually blame the router across the room for it being slow. But actually,
there's any number of links in this chain that could be the weakest. Yeah.
Right. And the number of links in the chain that are doing this right here, what we're describing with a great Chinese firewall, that adds time to how long it takes for that message to get there. Even just looking at it adds time, regardless of, and the more things you look at.
Looking at it is a lot faster than just passing it along, or a lot slower, I mean, than
right.
passing it along.
So if you, and this is one of the reasons why you will not see very many things hosted on servers in China, just because any data traffic coming to it or away from it,
it has to pass through that system. It's a bottleneck.
Right. So there are inherent downsides from just the performance sake of doing this. So to use another analogy, say every European country began doing this for their own regulatory purposes, right?
Good grief.
Imagine being five countries away from the person you're trying, the server that's hosting your YouTube.
The local data center, the nearest data center that's hosting this thing, yeah.
Yes. You're going to have to go through five of these checkpoints to get there, unless someone ran a wire that didn't connect anything else along the way, which could happen, to be fair, but it's very unlikely.
It's a very specialized thing, though. Yeah.
It's going to be very slow. And this is, I think, one of the reasons why we don't see a whole lot of this, is because if there's one thing that governments do understand, it's that regulation that has a direct impact to the voter base. Well, I say that. There's one thing that democratic countries understand. Anything, any law that gets made that has a noticeable impact on the average voter is going to probably be strictly scrutinized. Mm-hmm. You know, so...
Right, you're actually moving my cheese.
You're actually moving my cheese. Stop that, you know. So this is, I think, one of the reasons why. But this is like the ultimate level of how regulations from the other side of things could be enforced. And to be clear, this is the mechanism by which you would have to enforce things. There does not exist a way to regulate the content of the internet other than this, really, unless you have control of both the sender and the receiver. So that's why I think, you know, it's been, what, half an hour of us getting to this point, but I think it's very important to illustrate that
the background is important.
It's very important, because we're going to go to the other side now of the places where people may unironically actually call for some policies and laws to be created, which would regulate the internet. And so as we talk about these things, keep in mind, this is the only way to actually do it with some degree of certainty. And I say some because there's even ways to circumvent this. So we won't go there for now. So What are some things that people want to regulate about the internet?
The winternet. It's coming. It's much colder than the regular anyway.
Right.
Things okay. There's one common thing is like trying to control what people are allowed to say on the internet.
That's one. Yeah. I was thinking about like, what about the oldest thing? It actually has a name and it's before the internet, but it applies to the internet now. Wire fraud.
Okay.
Now this existed for a totally different reason, by the way, I suppose you could argue.
Okay.
But like fraud person sure. on the internet lied to me and it cost me money. Mm-hmm. I want retribution. Okay, so these are things that are illegal or hacking, you know, which by the way is one of the most hilarious, like if you read the laws around hacking, it's hilariously bad.
Well, yeah.
And you know, I guess a good tangent, by the way, all of the people that would write these laws they don't know anything about technology or the internet and it shows in their laws.
I think it was some like Japanese minister who recently is like one of the head guys involved in regulating the internet in Japan, admitted that he's like never used a computer in his life.
Yeah. And that doesn't surprise me at all. And even if he did, he wouldn't understand how it worked.
Right.
To be fair, though, that's like par for the course for governments. Most of the people that run government departments know nothing about the actual thing their department governs and regulates. That's just normal.
Right.
The internet is no exception. How can you regulate that, you know, in the case of fraud? Well, fraud by itself is already, it has a physical analog, so mm-hmm. it's regulated very similarly. And so I think the first rung of internet regulations has to do with not the internet itself, but either the producer or the user. You can regulate who makes the thing and then puts it on the internet or who looks at the thing on the internet. And there's, I think, two very good examples of this type of behavior. But before we get to those, I remember I kind of missed the tangent. Hacking laws. Literally, if you read the laws, it essentially just says if you use a computer or the internet for some other purpose other than what you're supposed to, and then doesn't define what supposed to is hacking. Or if you take control of or affect some system that you don't have a right to access or affect, then it's hacking. And
yeah, any unauthorized access.
Yes. Yeah. Which gets really sticky when you consider how many things that we call hacks were 100% given access because mm-hmm. people are dumb.
Yep.
But that's okay. You can be dumb and we'll still go after the person because that violates, I guess, the spirit of the law. And I guess as another quick tangent about this, the governments do this crap too. Punishing people that outsmarted them just because they didn't write the law good enough and throwing the book at them.
Mm-hmm.
Ross Ulbricht does not deserve to die in prison, by the way. This mm-hmm. is my whole thing. If you don't know who that is, Silk Road, look him up. Point is, the book got thrown at this guy for using the internet better than the law like governed. I would argue that he did nothing wrong, personally.
Mm-hmm.
But in a nutshell, he was doing things he was facilitating transactions on the internet that the government would rather not have been transacted.
Right.
And they just threw the book at him and sunk that man for years. And he was convicted because how can you have a trial where you can't understand what it is that he actually did, but you can tie him to a bunch of other things that we do understand, like moving drugs and other things, you know, like mm-hmm.
even though he didn't actually move any drugs.
No, never touched a drug. He never touched anything vile. You know, he just ran a server, but that server allowed other people to do things and we didn't like that, you know. In my opinion, it is the way he was treated would be very similar to if we went after Chevy, the auto manufacturer, because drug dealers like to drive.
Right.
You know,
if it weren't for your
Impalas.
Yeah. If it weren't for your Impalas.
Yeah.
Then they wouldn't have
moved them drugs. Trafficked
those drugs. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to throw the CEO of Chevy in jail for the rest of his life. Anyway. So that's a quick personal tangent, I suppose.
Yes.
So back to the thing I was talking about. So there are two things. So there are certain things that I think I don't even know if I want to say because it would probably not be great. But there are certain things involving children that if I think that's all I need to say, where certain images or videos, it doesn't matter if you're the one who put them on there or you're the one who had them. Somehow technical digital possession of those is enough to get you sunk. So we're not regulating the ISPs or the people who move these things around because it's too hard to tell. But we go after the person who's requesting this. Mm-hmm. We're going after the supply and the demand. We're not going after the market in this way. I would argue that we much more target the demand side of this, where if you're looking for these kinds of things, you know, if you look at a lot of the sting operations that are set up for these, there are honeypots that are put out, and anyone who sticks their hand in it looking for this, that's a dirt bag, and we need to get him. And to be fair, yes,
sure,
absolute degenerate dirtbag fatherless behavior, you know, like, get him.
I think that's beyond fatherless behavior. That's that's giving the fatherless a bad name.
It really is, you know. I have no nice things to say about it other than that, so I'm just gonna not even try to use euphemism. I'm just gonna move on. Yeah, it's horrifyingly awful. So yeah, I don't think anyone has any sympathy for those people, but that's one way you can regulate things done over the internet. You're not necessarily regulating the internet or even its content. You're regulating the behavior of the people requesting certain things on the internet.
Right.
The opposite of this would be piracy. Now, we still go after people for using pirated software, but if you look at where most of the effort I feel like is spent, it's actually more going after the people who are providing places for this to be distributed or generating it. You know,
you might get threatened by your ISP if they see that you're illegally downloading stuff, but like the government is not going to come after you, probably
not, because the damage done to the company whose software was pirated by you is miscellaneous, is tiny.
Right. The only reason your ISP cares is because they might get in trouble with that company for allowing you to do that without any repercussions.
Right, but even then that's also unlikely.
Sure.
It is way more likely, though, if they find that you have a server that's distributing this, that's who they're going to go after. That's who they want, because they're the one who's...
They're facilitating the whole thing.
Yeah.
If they go away, then all the recipients go away, too.
In theory.
Except that there's more, because information just wants to be free, by the way.
Yeah. So most laws that have to do with... And I think we can just take this to, I think, the things we're seeing now. Porn licenses...
Yep.
Hilarious that was a thing.
Yes.
Oi, oi. You got a license for that prawn?
Yes.
Did this ever actually happen in the UK?
I don't know about the UK.
I know that's where it was talked about. Or yes. Like that's when I heard about it.
Yeah. I did hear about that. That was a few years ago now. I don't remember whatever came of that.
I think that got laughed out of existence.
That seems reasonable. It is kind of happening in the United States.
It kind of is, yeah. But it's
not
angle.
Like get a license, but it's like you have to verify your age with a government ID to the provider of such material.
Yeah.
Weird. And in some places, like, this needs to be, it still ends up going to like a central database where you can, so that you're not literally providing your government ID to all these different providers. They can go to like some central thing where you're registered for this. So it functionally is a license.
Yeah.
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 This episode is not sponsored by NordVPN.
No.
Or any other VPN service.
Although there are some that we would probably...
Yeah, definitely not that one, actually. If we were going to take a VPN sponsorship, it wouldn't be them. But
yeah. But if iVPN, if you're out there, you know.
Get in touch.
Yeah. Our business email is probably attached to wherever you're listening to this. But yeah, so that's an example of a thing where, oh, you've gone to this website. This is enforced on the provider in this case, or the supply side, where if you're serving up this type of adult content, because that's the angle I think it's being approached, is think of the children. You know, you don't want the children looking
at
this stuff.
Yes. There are two ways that you can wrap any legislation to get it passed. Think of the children and national defense.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So think of the children. You've seen all these horrible things on the internet because you're an adult and you watch them. Imagine your kid getting that. Oh, well, I don't want it to go away because I still watch this, but I don't want Jimmy, my 16-year-old, to see it because I'm a hypocrite. Right. So yeah, I need a way that I can still do this But Jimmy can't. And, oh, you need to know what kind of weird stuff that I watch by attaching a number to my name and then to the things that I'm watching? Fine, so be it. You know, then this is how it would happen. Mm-hmm. And so essentially you're regulating the suppliers of this to say you need to verify the request to do this by them giving you a number, and then you give us that number and we tell you whether that number and the IP address that that number is coming from line up.
I think more than one of these providers, by the way, have just like blacklisted IP addresses from the states that are implementing this.
Yes.
They're just like, well, I guess we're just not going to deal with you then. You can find another way in.
Yep. Which I think, you know, now that we've established about
brief thing, since I've already mentioned the VPN thing, that would be a hilarious thing to intercept. Okay. When you get a request from someone in one of those states, don't just block it. Redirect them to a partnered VPN provider.
Totally legal. Yep. Hold on a second. I need to make some business deal calls.
I was going
to
say, you could actually make some money with that. Yeah.
Yep. Also, lol, just get your dad's number. It's, you know, by the way, that's how...
Kids have already been stealing their parents' credit card numbers forever, so...
Which is the thing we used to use to verify you're an adult, because even though you legally didn't have to be an adult to have a credit card... It was assumed that only an adult would. So, but yeah, so I guess we're kind of going into this way anyway. So why is this a bad thing? Like, why is it a bad idea to try to regulate the internet, I would suppose? And why is it probably not going to work? So we gave the CB example from earlier as to this has happened. All of this has happened before and will happen again, because this is a very similar scenario.
Mm-hmm.
But one example as to why this is not going to work is it's the internet. We're all connected. So good luck regulating anyone who's not in your country as a supplier. And this already happens. The number of countries that are bent out of shape about social media websites and them not keeping up to certain standards, and the ability for the social media's website to just tell them to get bent about it because, sorry, dog, my servers aren't in your country anyway, so I literally don't care.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Arrest me? Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to come across jurisdictions and... Yeah.
Oh, you're going to issue me a fine? Lol.
Lol, I just won't pay it.
Right.
Yeah.
Are you actually going to cut us off from your country, though?
Mm. You can try.
Because it's very difficult. By the way, your own citizens are going to find a way around whatever... things you put in place.
Mm-hmm.
So and they're also going to be angry at you for even trying.
Exhibit A, the Arab Spring. So this was a thing that happened a while back where there was a bunch of revolutions across the Arab world.
Mm-hmm.
They used Twitter to facilitate this. So the government's answer, which remember, we already told you, if you were listening, you should know what's about to happen. The government said, cut the internet lines because we can't make Twitter stop. And the citizens are already in revolt. So they're clearly not going to follow the law anyway. So cut the lines. Well, turns out, remember radios from earlier, you don't actually need hardwire access. You just need to be able to jiggle that electromagnetic spectrum to the nearest radio tower and then just start passing that around. And that's exactly what happened.
So long as some schmuck is close enough to the border to someone who does have access to the wide internet, all the traffic can route through that guy.
Yep.
It's going to be slower, much slower, but it will work.
It will work. Yep. And
when you're only sending 140 characters at a time, you can still get a lot of traffic through.
You can still get a lot of traffic through. And so, yeah, so that's one thing that will happen. And I've heard people in Europe that like are super pro EU government, EU regulations on the internet, on America. Like there's a really hilarious group of people that I used to talk to on the internet who were like, you know, well, your American freedom of speech laws are way too open and that just would never work here. And I said, well, that's too bad that our social media companies are your social media companies, because there is no such thing as German Facebook.
Right.
It's just Facebook. So, spoiler alert, I can say, and I remember there being a time, and this still exists, by the way, you can get in trouble for saying certain things on the internet, especially like we hear about it in the UK a lot, where if you tweet something offensive that...
Right, police will actually show up at your door.
Yeah, the offended party can have you arrested for that, regardless. I love the fact that I can just go on the internet and just say offensive, and I'm not saying that I do this, but like I am free to just go say offensive things at them. And then they're like, well, I'm going to have you arrested. It's like, lol, no, you're not.
You and what army? Like,
so, yeah, sorry. Bigger army diplomacy determines that that's just not going to happen.
Right.
And
for all its faults, the United States government is not going to send me to your country to go face charges for this.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, spoiler alert to all you countries out there that are trying to regulate this, all you're doing is making your citizens second-class internet citizens.
Right.
Just for the record, that's what you're doing. And that's exactly how it happens. Like, I can say whatever I want about whatever topic on the internet, and people across the world can get super butthurt mad at me about it, and there's nothing they can do about it. And all they're doing by putting those restrictions up are just hurting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the answer is always, well, we'll just stop Twittering in Germany.
Well,
go ahead. Why haven't you? We'll wait. You know, it just won't happen, you know? And if you want to have that, then cool. You can move to China then if you don't like Twitter.
Yeah, they figured it out.
They figured it out.
Mostly.
Mostly. You know, except Hong Kong, but whatever. Even though I know that went the way probably we didn't want it to, but still, I'm sure there are still plenty of people who get on because we can see them. But those are really your only options. And I think it's been very clear that we've seen that having a bunch of parallel of the same services that are explicitly for the purposes of networking and communicating don't make any sense. Because what's the point of a network that's regimented and segregated like that? You're just going to create different classes of people. And any additional levels of regulations are going to create lower class in that way. And don't get me wrong, there are ways around these things, and some people might think this is a good thing, but all you're doing is... But even if you take all these options off the table, you know, there are still ways to connect and get the word out, but beyond going to that and making now all of the internet traffic slower, even if you're just trying to regulate one company. And the more companies you try to regulate and the more ISPs you put on a list, congregations, you're just going to make the internet even slower, you know? And I think that's really the crux of the issue is that countries still and supranational entities like the EU still behave like they can regulate these things. And I think a lot of it comes from the fact that they could up to this point, like they can just make regulations for their citizens. That's a thing that all governments do.
Yes.
And they just get away with it, you know. But when you're dealing with something like this that's international, you can't just do that. And I don't know that they've really thought about it or that they understand that they can't just do that, you know, because when you're in a government, it is super easy to think about, and this is, again, my issue with Germans in general, well, we'll just make the thing illegal so no one will do it. Like, this is the attitude that everyone who ever makes a law has.
Lol.
They never think about whether or not people would actually do it anyway, because usually they can use
it. Well, only criminals would do that.
Yeah, and no one wants to be a criminal, right?
Right.
And if they did, then we'll send our goons with guns to go get them. Well, what happens when the criminals don't live there?
Right.
And you can't do that. And you just realize, and I think this is a dangerous thing that countries are going to flirt with, where their impotence is going to really start to show, you know? So, I mean, my word of advice to governments is quit while you're ahead. You know, this monopoly you have is largely held up just by opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing's going to shatter that opinion faster than the internet if you push it. And another thing to think about...
don't pick fights with the internet. The internet always wins.
It always wins. And I think it's also kind of funny that one of the issues that they have, and this is something that I've considered, you know, what about the social media platform's ability to manipulate elections?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a very interesting thing to bring up. That is, I believe, something you should be concerned about.
Yes.
Problem, though, if they can do that and they're already inside the wire... what makes you think you're ever going to get this passed anyway?
Right.
It's already too late. You know, if they can do that, they already have. So, and I'm not saying that's a good thing, but what I am saying is maybe elections aren't the best way to look at it then, if that's the case. Or maybe, you know, I don't know. You're going to have to get creative with this. But I think, you know, it's really pushing the boundaries of, you know, what we consider to be acceptable. Because at the end of the day, that's what all laws are. It's just, we as a group of people have just decided that this is bad. We're just writing out, we're applying morals into written word that we then execute on, mm-hmm. right? But your standards of what is or isn't moral or immoral used to only matter within your country. And so, but now it's international, especially when it comes to things like things that are facilitated by the internet, which speech is the biggest one that is facilitated. but not just speech. Now, you know, because you can still intercept products, you can still do things like that, you can try, but people's ability to communicate and actually do certain things through the internet makes it harder to do all of those things. Mm-hmm. You know, like a weird thing to think about is, you know, when we think about the drug trade, right? Like that's a thing that a lot of countries and a lot of people have, feel like they have a really good understanding of, you know, drugs bad or should be regulated. Ergo, you know, how do we control the transmission of these things? I think a lot of people have this idea that, oh, it's like a bunch of like narco submarines and planes flying into abandoned airstrips. The amount of drugs being circulated through just the normal mail is insane.
Yes.
And most people don't think about that. It's just using the same system that you use to move everything else.
Yeah. Why would I go drive somewhere when I can just pay a few dollars and have the USPS do it?
Yeah. Or any other country. And what are you going to do? Are you going to start opening every package that gets sent?
Yeah. People are going to be furious about that.
Yeah. It's literally the same for the internet, you know? And
yeah, it literally is that you have to start opening all the packages. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I guess the question about like, can you really regulate the internet and should you can? Yes, but it's yes or no. There is no, it's, are you regulating it or not? And if you are, you're causing it to be worse.
There's no middle ground between a free internet and like totalitarian control.
Right. There is no way to, and again, same thing. Well, we're just writing a law to only stop certain things on the internet. But if you, the moment there's a law that stops anything from happening,
you have the power to stop everything.
Well, yeah. Not only that, but you, in order to even have the ability to execute that, you have to stop everything to check it.
I guess that's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. And therein lies the power to regulate anything. And so there really isn't a way to do this partially. There's no gentle way to do this. Either you're doing it or you aren't. And doing anything about it is going to cause a negative impact for your citizenry. It just is. And then beyond that, it's like, should you? I don't think you should, obviously.
Obviously.
And to be fair, there are analogs to get to the thing you actually care about. So the things I mentioned earlier that I actually do think it's, I have a lot harder time turning my nose up at and saying this shouldn't be regulated, you know, like things that involve children, for example.
Right.
There are ways to deal with that because they're people. You can regulate people. And that's, in the end of the day, what all regulations are. You're not regulating.
Well, yeah, every law governs human behavior, right?
Right.
You can't tell the wires what to do. They can't hear you.
Right. They're not people. But I guess more so in a way where it's very easy for people to think like, I'm going to create a regulation for the companies that make this. Like, we're going to regulate pharmaceuticals. I mean, technically, yes, but any regulation applied to anything, it's at the end of the day regulating people. You know, it's not regulating the company. The company doesn't listen. The company is people. People make choices. People put things on the internet. People request things from the internet. Mm-hmm. You're regulating people at the end of the day. And what you're doing to regulate those people affects other people. It's all connected. You can't just selectively, you know, and I guess this is like maybe the whole reason I even wanted to talk about this in the first place. I hate the narratives that get formed around these things where people act like we, the people, are doing this to them, the other non-people, the internet, the ISPs, the companies, the whatever.
Those are people too.
But they're people. And guess what? That also affects we, the people. We're regulating ourselves. Because we are all the people, and even if it doesn't directly apply to us, it's going to indirectly apply to us. When you regulate companies regarding drugs, you're either going to reduce the ability for those drugs to be made, or you're going to increase the cost of those drugs, or you're going to decrease the availability of those drugs. It's going to happen. Again, the only way, or you take the totalitarianism pill, or you just mandate it happen. So you're either telling people what they can or can't do, which is going to affect you, or we're all at the end of a gun, and we're just going to do what we're told anyway. So now it's no longer about what you can and can't do, it's what you're going to do, comrade. You know? And so, that I guess that's my biggest thing, is when people say, well, people shouldn't be able to do this on the internet, you know, we need to regulate TikTok or whatever. It's like, you're not. You're going to regulate TikTok users.
Right.
And you, by the way, you know, because internet users, I guess, is a better way to put it. When you say I want to regulate the internet, what you really ought to be saying is I want to regulate people on the internet, people using the internet. And that's my whole point, is don't do it. Like, it's, there's just no good way to do it. When you regulate the internet, if you really want to regulate people, let's just talk about it like it is. Regulate people and make the laws about the people. If people are using the internet to do a thing you don't like, why are we trying to save them by taking the option off the table? If they really want to do it, isn't that not the problem? You know, like a good, and we saw this with drugs. Drugs are bad. No, they're not. Drugs are things. Things cannot be bad. People abusing drugs is bad.
Right.
So, and why do people abuse drugs? Because they want to. They have the behavior to do so. And that may even be because they're addicted. And that's bad. So let's, why are we pretending like these people are incapable or there's nothing wrong with them? It's just the drug, when there clearly is something wrong with them and we should regulate them. And I know why we don't, because no one wants to write a law that says, oh, we're going to, this is a law that's going to imprison drug users. If I phrased a drug regulation that way, everyone would hate it because we don't like that. But right. But if I just change it to say, yeah, we're
and
going
also
to...
also nobody wants to do the actual work of helping people with addiction.
Right. But if I just said, yeah, we're going to ban this drug, people love that idea because it's easy to blame the drug.
Right.
But the outcome's the same.
It's just a chemical. Yeah.
Yeah. Outcome's the same. So same thing with the internet.
Yep.
I don't like it. You can't even do it anyway effectively, and don't test it. I mean, don't try it. But they're going to. And I think in the years to come, it's going to be very hilarious to watch these things crash and burn and fall apart. And in the myriad of ways that are going to happen. Some countries are going to become so stifled and choked out by them regulating it that people are just going to no longer like it or use it. Companies are going to leave because they can't utilize the services they would normally like to utilize. And those who, either that or they're going to have the most flaccid internet regulations that are only going to be used selectively to just target specific people and essentially hang them or guillotine them as martyrs and examples of what not to do, which is how the US is currently handling it, you know. And that's probably going to be the most sustainable way to do it. But in reality, you're still just ruling by totalitarian fear. Like, you're using that mm-hmm. as your mechanism to keep people online. And I think it's immoral. So
I agree.
Anyway, well, if you're listening to this, it's not too late for you. And see, this is where a good sponsor segment for a VPN would go. So again, if you are a legit VPN, hook us up. I would be more than happy to recommend a VPN. Although, don't just use any VPN. Do your research.
Yes. Yeah, there's lots of misinformation in the advertising for most VPN services. And there are like two good ones that I can think of.
Yeah. But that's not the purpose of this episode.
Yeah.
Although it would make a good segue topic, but I think we're about out of time. So do you have anything else you want to say about it? I think it's pretty straightforward.
I think you did a good job of explaining the problems with that and how, yeah, it's not going to work.
Nope. But they'll try. Philosophers.
Philosophers.
If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.